Hello, everyone. Welcome back to I See What You're Saying, the Disciplined Listening Podcast. I'm Michael Reddington, and today it is my pleasure to welcome our next guest, Natalie Doyle Oldfield. Natalie has won multiple awards for her work in the field of trust. She is the author of two books, Trusted and the Power of Trust. She's the founder of Success Through Trust, and she's developed her own client trust index. And I'm really excited to share this conversation with you all today as she goes through some of the top lessons from her research and her experience in the field with her clients, including her definition of trust equity, her eight principles of trust, her three dimensions of trust, and some of the most important lessons she's learned from her client trust index. It's a great and educational conversation, and we can apply all of these lessons both inside our organizations and outside in the market with our clients as well. Really looking forward to sharing this all with you today. Thank you for being here. While you're here, take a quick second. Please like the show, share the show, subscribe to the show, leave us your feedback. We'd love to hear from you. And take a second to check out our sponsors when you can. Please head over to humantel.com and enter the code INQUASIVE25 for 25% off their best-in-class online training to develop the skill set necessary for recognizing what people are likely thinking and feeling at any moment in time by identifying emotional shifts through their facial expressions and nonverbal communication. For the professional interviewers, head over to certifiedinterviewer.com. That's where you get all your questions answered about the International Association of Interviewers, both what you will get from the association and what you can contribute to the organization. That's also where you can learn all you need to know about the Certified Forensic Interviewer designation. And then finally, while you're online, please head over to inquasive.com. That's where you can learn more about the programs our clients ask us to custom facilitate for their senior leaders, sales teams, negotiation teams, HR teams, and more, to teach them how to apply the strategic and ethical observation and persuasion techniques necessary to unlock the everyday confessions hiding in all of our high impact conversations. We really appreciate you being here for another week. Thank you so very much. So now, without further ado, I introduce to you, Natalie Doyle Oldfield. Hello, Natalie. It is so great to meet you. Thank you for being here today. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me, Michael.
It is my pleasure. I'm really looking forward to this conversation. Trust is one of these concepts that gets thrown around all the time, different takes on it, different statistics showing how it's important in so many ways. But I believe regardless of how we look at it, intuitively, like we all know that trust is extremely important, how we build it, how we maintain it, how we lose it, get it back. There's so many things we could talk about. But you have two books on the subject, including your newest, Trusted. And to get the conversation started, and please correct me where I might screw this up, I believe you coined the term trust equity. And if I'm on the right path, I'd love to start by asking, what does that mean and how do we build it?
Okay. Well, those are two great questions and big questions. So trust equity, I'll start with what does it mean, is the amount of trust a customer or a stakeholder has in an organization. It's a quantifiable number. It's the amount. And how do you build it? Well, that's a longer answer that we'll get to throughout this entire conversation. However, I want to talk a little bit more about trust equity because it's been the question everyone is asking lately. And I guess that's probably because we live in uncertain times and people are skeptical. And like you said, everyone kind of knows what it feels like to have trust, Michael, and they know what it feels like when you don't have it. And when I started my research and started down the path of how do people decide to trust, I actually took a step before that and was really trying to answer the question, like, what is it that makes some companies successful and others not? Why do some companies have the best clients and highest profit and no customer churn, and they seem to attract all the leads and have all the best talent? And why is it, what do they do? And I got so excited and interested in this, Michael, that I actually went back to university and did graduate research to answer this, what is the singular factor? And, you know, what makes people tick? And how is it that people decide to buy? I was looking at how they decide to buy, not so much how they decide to trust, but to buy. And what I found that this singular factor that makes some companies so successful and others not is trust. It all comes down to trust. And then the more I got looking into it, I noticed that there was no real way to measure it. And I always came from what gets managed gets measured, or what gets measured gets managed, right? So I, while doing my graduate research, actually created a measurement tool. And the diagnostic I built, I call the Client Trust Index, and it measures and puts a quantifiable score on an organization's trust equity. So trust equity is that precious asset and that really tangible number that a company can have and use as a key performance indicator. So, you know, really long way of saying that's what trust equity is.
So you mentioned the Client Trust Index.
Yes.
I'm not going to ask you to spill everything on the conversation. I understand that this is a lot of the work that you do.
Yeah.
But from a key takeaway or a key understanding level, what are some of the most important factors that go into the Client Trust Index? Because I'm sure measuring something as intangible as trust isn't necessarily as easy as some of the other measurables that businesses might be used to tracking.
Yeah, I mean, they're used to tracking profits, right? They're used to tracking margins, the number of leads that come in. They might, some of my clients track the number of referrals. Very few companies measure trustworthiness and get a trust equity score. My clients that measure, we look at various measurement dimensions, and the tool looks at how a company communicates, how it behaves, and how it serves, Michael. So in the framework that I created, in order for someone to build trust equity, there needs to be a focus on communication, behavior, and service. So I call it the trust triangle. That's how you build trust. And really, the Client Trust Index measures how a company is doing with how it's communicating, how it's behaving, and how it's serving. So it's a survey. It's an electronic survey and or telephone survey that a company hires me, and over 45 to 90 days, you can get a trust equity score. I survey your clients or your stakeholders, and we ask a number of questions, and there's statements where within 9 minutes, you get an overall score. And it's a holistic view, Michael, of the entire organization. It's not about one department or one division or this enterprise or that. It's a holistic view of the trustworthiness. And there is a scale, and clients fall in, you know, either exceptional trust and or, you know, strong trust, all the way to needs help, you know, danger zone, if you will, that a lot is required to rebuild trust.
When you look at the companies after you do the work and you get the score, when you look at the companies that score in that strong to excellent or excel area, what are the, if you're going to look at each leg of the triangle, do triangles have legs? Whatever. But as you look at each piece of the triangle, communication, behavior, service, what would you say are the top, you know, two or three tops behaviors that really drive that overall score across the triangle?
Well, I don't know. It depends.
Okay.
So every company is different, Michael. It's
sure.
It's actually a really great question. However, what I can say, and like, I mean, literally every company is different. However, we are all deciding to trust based on the cumulative communications, behavior, and service. And a company can excel at communication. They can be clear in their communication, consistent, be wonderful listeners, be empathetic and sincere, and they can excel or do very, very well on the service side and, you know, be transparent and, you know, be sincere. However, if they don't behave with integrity and with the customer's best interest or the stakeholder's best interest in mind, or they don't walk the talk, they're not doing what they say they're going to do, they don't do well. In fact, oftentimes, you know, I share, when I share that story, I say, you know, the whole base of the triangle falls down because behavior is at the base. So one of the areas where a number of companies usually have more challenges with are on the behavior side. And that's where the ethics and integrity come in, and it's abiding by their company values and, as I said, acting in the best interests of the other person. So here's an example, Michael. Here's an example. So last week, I was working with a manufacturing company, and they manufacture goods and services for the healthcare industry. And so they sell their products to hospitals and clinics and, you know, healthcare facilities, if you will. And they sell a product where one might think that the bill of materials, the makeup of the product, wouldn't matter what kinds of things, you know, if they change the ingredients, if you will. So they were very open and honest with their customers. And they said, you know, we've made a few changes to the product, and, you know, we wanted to give you the heads up to let you know that we're going to have different pricing, which is acting in the customer's best interest, and that we are, you know, going to be shipping things out on this date. Great. Well, they were talking with me and saying, okay, well, how do we make sure that we really communicate well that we are acting in the best interests of the customers? So what we did is we said, okay, well, what if we're the customer, what's most important to us? How do we do that? Because customers often have different priorities, right? So we thought about who's going to use the product, timelines, should it be shipped differently now? When is the price changing? And it was a great exercise to talk through what's most important to the customer. How do we manage their expectation? And again, like I said, a lot of companies that I work with that score very high and have very high trust equity, that is the one area where they may need to improve. And it's because it's a more involved area. Maybe your customer really wants to know, you know, understand how community minded you are. Maybe they want to know how sustainable you are. They want to know, you know, how you really are doing things with a social conscience. So it's a hard question. That's why I say it depends.
Oh, and you're 100% right. Every situation is different. Every company is different. Every relationship's different. People are different. So to paint with too broad a brush would be dangerous. I do love how you illustrated that behavior is at the base of the triangle.
It is.
As you went through that, you listed so many great communications, the consistency, the clarity. You talked about on the service side being transparent. So those would be behaviors that hopefully we're all familiar with at this point, but are very important. But even from the outside, not being familiar with all of your research, I can clearly see that the behavior is the base of the triangle. And when I think about trust, and I obviously would I say this to get your input, I feel like trust is based on evidence. And we can say lots of things, but if we don't have the evidence for people to experience to back it up, then can they really trust us? Are they actually having faith? How far are we really going here? So the behavior really would be the evidence producing peace. How are we behaving? Because that's what people can see. That's what they can relate to. And if the behavior is not there, I could easily see that triangle collapsing.
Yeah, there's also, so yes. And there's also an emotional element to it, right? So there's actually there are three dimensions to trust. There's behavioral, cognitive, and emotional. And so in my new book, that you mentioned in the beginning, Trusted, the Proven Path to Customer Loyalty and Business Growth, I don't go into the detail of the three different types of dimensions. In my first book, The Power of Trust, How Top Companies Build and Manage and Protect It, that actually has some of the theory that would go into that. This new book is really meant to be a guide for people that want to build their trust equity. And like the title says, they want to be the most trusted in their industry. And the triangle, I do go into detail around how that trust triangle was built with these three components of trust in this trust triangle. They all, as you said, they all incorporate being, you know, how to be a great communicator. And coming out of these three components, I have what I call, Michael, the eight principles of trust. And listening carefully with empathy and compassion and involving the other person in a conversation or a decision or discussion that affects them is principle number one. That is clearly in the communications side, as is principle number two, which is communicate using clear, concrete, and conversational language. So when you invited me on this podcast, I was so excited because I, like you, believe that listening truly is a skill and communication is so important. In fact, when you're really looking to connect with someone and build trust, we actually do look for the evidence, as you said. Are they listening carefully enough? And we do that through, you know, paralinguistic cues. And we also, you know, decide really quickly, do I trust this person? And a lot of that comes from, are they listening? And are they empathetic? And how do they communicate? But on the emotional side, it's, are they walking the talk? And are they doing what they say they're going to do? Like, that's more the evidence-based stuff.
And I would imagine that the all three legs of the triangle or all three components to address are important. Like, it's hard to do 100%. One or two and still get the trust. All three of them got to be there. And maybe the success or the consistency fluctuates a little bit, but they all have to be there.
They do.
When you talked about how quickly we decide to trust and you snapped your fingers, I know a lot of what you do includes science. So what does the science say on how fast people can make the decision to trust somebody?
All of my work is evidence-based, and the framework, as you said, is based on a scientific method and has been tested out. And I love that you're asking. It actually, neuroscientists have shown that it takes 33 milliseconds for someone to decide to trust based on facial expressions, Michael. It's so quick. I mean, it's quicker than me even doing this. And, you know, sometimes I say that people say, oh, no, it can't be. It actually truly is. And, you know, if we just think about jumping on Zoom together, we're both on time. We were actually both a little bit early. We're both on time. The very first thing we do is we look at the other person's face. And so it's pretty incredible how quickly we decide. And it's so fun. Like I said, I was working with a company last week. Well, we were doing a workshop and I was asking people questions about their, before I walked into the room, what they were thinking. And then, you know, a few minutes after, and subconsciously, we're making these judgments and deciding to trust. And most people now, going forward for the rest of the day, you will be much more conscious of it, as will your listeners. But most people, it's all subconscious and they don't even realize. It's like in 33 milliseconds. It's so quick.
I do believe it. I wouldn't question that number at all. I certainly believe it. And by the way, thank you for deciding to trust me and not hang up when you looked at my face. I appreciate that. When they look at that 33 milliseconds, just guessing, I would guess that some of that is familiarity. Some of that is, are they smiling or scowling? So there's kind of some factors that can go in. I think I read one study once, which on a related but different subject, where like, does somebody's face remind them of somebody else's face, like similar bone structure? What, I mean, I can't speak to that. It's beyond my expertise for sure. But with the research that you read, were there any particular factors that people appear to focus on in that 33 milliseconds to help make that decision?
Yes. So it's really, you know, your eyes, your facial, it's all facial expression. So it's your eyes. You mentioned your smile and, you know, are they smiling? And as we know, I mean, some people don't smile with their teeth, right? Lots of people can smile without showing their teeth. So you can smile with your eyes or even with your mouth closed. My daughter's, one of her girlfriends, her best friends, she smiles like this. And, you know, but you can see that she's smiling. So it's really your eyes, your forehead, and your facial, your mouth, your smile. Got it.
Makes it, because that's usually where we're looking anyway. Sort of in that eye, bridge of the nose, forehead area is generally where our gaze goes first. So that makes sense.
Yeah. One thing I would add, Michael, you know, especially on Zoom and, you know, or in any virtual environment, whether it's Teams, Zoom, Google Meet, there's also the background. So I have a program called Trust Mastery, and it's a course where people learn the step-by-step process of how to build relationships of trust with colleagues, coworkers, and clients. And, you know, really the ultimate is you become a trusted advisor. And we talk about how to build trust online and how to do that quickly. And this course that I offer is all online. So it's takes place over 6 weeks and it's on Zoom like we are. And it's, you know, 2 hours once a week and cameras are on. And what's really interesting is that at the beginning of the course, a lot of people, you know, might have a background that is a fake background. You know, it's a picture, like one guy in the program has a picture of downtown Savannah and the beautiful moss on the trees and the buildings. And another woman in the program, you know, she's in Las Vegas and she always has a picture of the Las Vegas Strip behind her. Well, what's really interesting is when we're deciding, when we're turning on that Zoom and logging into a meeting, not only are people noticing your posture, your facial expressions, whether you're smiling, whether you're standing, because I think you're standing right now, or sitting, they're noticing your background, right? So you have your podcast logo, which that's another thing that says to me, okay, I'm in the right place. This is trustworthy. I'm in the right place. And to your point about familiarity, for those who listen to your podcasts and subscribe, they see the little, you know, the icon, the round yellow circle, and they go, okay, yeah, this is the right one. And, you know, for those who don't have that, people are looking at your clothes, your facial expressions, how you move, and everything that they see behind you. So that, if, as I like to say, every single thing we do and everything people see communicates a message. And it communicates, should I trust or not?
Agreed. And even thinking back to my investigative career, there were times where the room we chose, the investigator that we chose, if there was an option, how we set up that room, which way the chairs were facing, which way somebody was looking. There were times where I would, if I was using somebody's office, I might redecorate. I might move things around and down to what I wear. Like, depending on who I'm going to be interviewing that day, the color of the shirt might change, or do I wear a jacket, or do I not? Like, all of these things could change based on the impression we're looking to have, apparently as fast as 33 milliseconds, in order to create the rapport-based relationship necessary to move forward together to obtain the truth. I don't want to ask you to give your course away, so please don't take it that way. But as you're looking for people to begin to develop that trust mastery and earn the title of trusted advisor, not just put it in their email signature and tell everybody that's what they are out of the gate, because I feel like that's a good way to lose trust right away before someone's really connected with you. What are some of the key considerations that people need to keep in mind as they're going down the path of trust mastery?
Well, I guess the... So can you... What are some of the key considerations? So what do you mean by that? I think I know what you mean, but what do you mean by that, Michael?
No, I appreciate you asking. We could take it one of two ways. What should people be saying or doing? Again, I'm trying to be very respectful of your course, so I'm not asking you to open up your syllabus in front of everybody. But what should people be saying or doing? What should their priorities be as they are going down the path of trust mastery to earn that tag of trusted advisor?
Well, I guess it starts with, it's a great question. It starts with, what do I want to achieve? So what would be my goal? Why do I want to master? So, I think in terms of examples, Michael. So I'm thinking about one person that enrolled in the Trust Mastery Program, a cybersecurity engineer. And to keep his anonymity, we'll call him Mark, because his name starts with an M. So we'll call him Mark. And he joined the program, brilliant, brilliant engineer on the front line, working in what's called a security operations center. So he would be the one on the phone or on Teams or online with clients. So very client-facing role, yet very technical person. And he has a business degree and a computer science degree. And Mark wanted to take the program and did enroll in it because he felt like he wasn't advancing inside the organization as quickly as he could be. And when I asked him, tell me a little bit about that, he said, well, I asked my manager for permission to take it because I've been in this role for a while. I have great client relationships, yet I don't really feel that confident. And I really, you know, feel like I'm ready for a promotion. And I need to build relationships inside the company as well as externally with clients. And in his firm, like a lot of firms, quite honestly, Michael, even though he wasn't responsible for business development, you know, everyone that's client facing, if you bring in business or excel at providing an extraordinary customer experience, you are recognized. So Mark, youngish man, took the program. I say youngish, you know, late 20s. And very well educated, but I could see almost immediately, which is why I'm thinking about him, because his background was, you know, his desk. It was a nice looking office. yet he looked really young. Now, some of your listeners might be thinking, well, what can he do about that? I mean, it's great that he looks young, but he looks so young that he felt people were not taking him seriously. So we did a couple of very simple things. He put he had 2 degrees, and he put them framed on the wall behind him. And he had 2 small children. So I said, put a picture of your kids behind you. So you can't see mine, but, you know, like I have a picture. If I move my desk, I have a picture of my kids here, right? It's, I want to see them in my office. However, everything we do communicates a message. So it always starts, Michael, with what is a person's objective? What is it that they want to achieve? He wanted to be a stronger, more confident communicator with clients. He wanted to contribute to bringing in more business to the firm. And he wanted to get noticed internally because he wanted a promotion. So all this to say, we made those tiny little changes. And then, so week one is all around providing an extraordinary client experience. That's what week one is. And then we get into, for the remainder of the program, how is it that we decide to trust? And we walk through the principles of trust, and we spend a lot of time on communication, an entire module is on communication, on body language and paralinguistic cues. We have listening assessments. I have a trusted advisor assessment and some communications assessments. And these are some of the components that you were asking about. Well, with this fellow, Mark, after week two, he said, you know, I didn't realize like the way that I'm portraying myself is not in a trustworthy manner. Because we do a self-assessment as well. And what was so great is by the end of the program, clients were asking his manager, what happened to Mark? Like he's so much more confident. And he started asking to go on client meetings with account managers, and he and another person in his company actually went out and visited a client, and there was a transformation. He started asking more questions because one of the parts of the program is we learn about the Socratic method and how to ask questions to better understand the client's or the other person's perspective. And so he went on this client meeting, asked all these questions, and really, really behaved in a different way that they were used to, and ended up extending a project that he was on and bringing in new business to the firm. And so it was phenomenal because, you know, he really achieved his objective, and his manager was thrilled because he transformed into a very confident person who clients started looking to as a trusted advisor. And he became more sales sensitive. So the sales team was really happy because he started noticing what a sales opportunity was. And then a year later, he actually got a promotion to team lead. And so, you know, he achieved his objective, and the, you know, the transformation was quite phenomenal, and he actually brought in business too. So there's several steps that we go through over this 6-week program. And I say 6 weeks, Michael, oftentimes I work with a company and they say, okay, well, let's do it over 12 weeks, but there's 6 modules. And, you know, a lot of times it's 6 weeks, but the timeline, it depends on the company. So, you know, that company, we did it over an 8-week period as an example. And we have 6 modules. In addition to the modules where it's a group program, we have one-on-one calls and assessments, as I had mentioned, and we do small group exercises around the clients and or around coworkers. So it's really fun, actually.
I'm sure it is. And being able to customize it for each group's important. And it's a great example, because I'm sure not only did he get more confident, but he didn't actually change who he was. He just learned how to change how he talked to himself and how he presented himself without changing who he was as a person. And as you were going through that, I was stacking up follow-up questions to ask, but you brought up questions. So I'm going to go right to that. What are some techniques for asking questions in a way that increases trust?
Well, it always starts with the mindset of understanding what's important to the other person. Mm-hmm. So when you start with the mindset of being curious, not I need to ask this, this, and this, but being curious and open, Michael. Curious and open to understanding, the outcome is different. So that's actually step one, being curious and open. And then it's around trying to understand the other person's perspective. So they're very, what I would recommend is always questions like, you know, that are wide open, you know, the basic who, what, when, where, why. And open-ended questions versus closed questions, yes, no.
Sure.
And I guess that the most important thing is really trying to understand the other person's perspective.
Mm-hmm.
I often talk about in workshops or presentations that I do with companies or groups that when you think about a person as almost like, you know, an analogy or metaphor of an iceberg, right? We're told that we only see the tip of the iceberg. And there's all this, you know, the bulk of the iceberg is underneath. Well, if you dive deep with the person you're meeting and ask them questions to really understand what's going on beneath the surface, you get a different outcome. And if you imagine, as an example, at the end of your day, you go to the grocery store on the way home, Michael, and you see one of your neighbors or one of your friends. In North America, chances are your neighbor is going to say, "Hi, how's it going?" And what do you say, Michael?
Assuming I'm not interested in having this conversation because it's the end of the day and I'm getting the groceries I should have got last weekend and I'm trying to get home for my family, I'm looking to go, "Good man, how are you?"
Right. And that is what most people say, good. You maybe have had the busiest day. You're on the rush to get home. Your family's waiting for the groceries to make dinner. Everybody's hangry. But you say, good. You don't really find out that much stuff, right? And so what I always share with the people I work with is just imagine, like, everybody's got all this stuff going on. What's really happening? What's it like to be in their world? You know, are they a dad? Do they have kids at home? Are they in a hurry? Have they worked all day? And when you actually take time to think about that, you may not ask the same question. So it's really about going back to principle number one, which is being empathetic, right? Listening carefully. We can listen, as you know, because you talk about it with multiple guests. We can listen with our eyes as well as our ears and see what's happening. So I, you know, at a high level, I would start with big questions.
Well, and I can relate to that. I mean, certainly we don't want to close doors. We don't want to put people on the defensive. We don't want people to catch this, feel interrogated. We want people to feel like they're being invited into a conversation, not attacked. Give them a little bit of control, opportunity to steer the conversation as we go. So I certainly agree. And I must say, from my completely biased perspective, I'm very happy your first two principles are listening based. Thank you for that. But it's, I mean, and you know, I'm sure it's part of what you teach. It's how we validate each other and the worth and the the conversation and, you know, so on. So I'm curious, you mentioned the first two. What are the other six principles of trust?
Well, all eight of them are in my book. And actually each chapter is a principle of trust. So the next one is around being honest, open, mm-hmm. honest, and transparent. Then it's around being consistent, predictable, and reliable, doing the right thing, acting in the customer's best interest, delivering on your promise, and committing to the long term.
That's a great list. I feel like people underestimate the power of predictability. I'll even joke with some of the leaders that I work with. Like, if you're a jerk, but you're a predictable jerk, that actually makes you more trustworthy. Like, I'd rather you not be a jerk, but if you're going to be a jerk, be a predictable jerk. So in a weird way, you end up being more trustworthy that way. So from your experience, getting away from the predictable jerk example.
It's true.
How important
is consistency? We know what we're going to get, right?
Yes. When it comes to building trust, especially in new relationships, how important is consistency?
It's extremely important. We all want to know what we're going to get. The opposite of trust is uncertainty. And when we don't know, we don't trust. And so consistency makes it easier for people to make the decision to work with us, to buy from us, to invest in us. And consistency, you know, increases familiarity, which is why, I mean, I do love your example. If someone's a jerk all the time, at least you know, okay, that's how they are. We know what we're going to get. So it's really important.
And better than not knowing. You know, how many times do leaders, sales professionals you were talking about earlier, they get upset because somebody didn't come to them or somebody didn't give them information or they didn't have what they needed when they needed it. Well, if I'm not sure how you're going to react and I'm feeling vulnerable and the information I'm sharing with you is sensitive, well, then I'm either A, going to try to find the perfect time, which almost never exists. It certainly won't be on your schedule. It'll be on my perceived schedule. Or yes. B, I'm going to keep this a secret and see if I can figure it out myself before anybody else has to know, because I don't know how you will react. And that's a risk that I'm not willing to assume.
Yeah. So it's in my business, I work with teams to help them build trust inside their team. So they have a high performance team. And then I work with people who want to build relationships of trust with customers. And they really want to become the most trusted and, you know, become a trusted advisor. On the work that I do with teams and to build trust inside an organization, that the consistency is just as important there, Michael, as it is externally. In fact, I often use this example of this woman I used to work with. Great person, loved her. In fact, I had lunch with her a couple times a week. Like, we were great friends at work. I trusted her because I knew that she's an awesome person. However, no one on her team trusted her. And we used to work together, and I have since now worked with her to help her and her team build trust with each other, because trust is the key ingredient to a high performance team. Like, it's the glue, if you will, that keeps everybody together. And when you have high trust in your team, you outperform, you're more innovative, you get stuff done, and it's funner. The biggest challenge she had is she would show up some days and she'd be all happy. How's everybody doing? And other days she'd show up and, you know, she was in a bad mood and she was snippy with everybody. And I knew, because I knew her quite well, oh, she must have driven the kids to school today, or, you know, she had to take the dog to doggy daycare, or, you know, maybe someone didn't show up that was supposed to show up at the daycare, so they're late. I mean, all these things happen, right? But the team, they never knew which person they were going to get. So they just didn't trust. So that's on the inside team. And that's one thing that a leader can do to or anyone can do to build more trust with colleagues and coworkers is really work on your consistent, predictable, and reliable behavior. On the customer side, it's very similar. We want to buy from a company that is consistent, predictable, and reliable. That, you know that the price is always going to be the same. They're always going to tell you everything that goes into a product. They're always going to have the same packaging or the same email signature. We know what to expect. And when you know what to expect, it makes it easier for people to buy.
It makes it easier for people to buy. It makes it easier for them to listen. It makes it easier for them to agree. It makes it easier for them to take risks. It makes it easier for them to take on a challenge or something that they don't necessarily want to do or could otherwise maybe refuse or talk their way out of. It's so important. And one of the things I love that you just illustrated there was the situational or contextual awareness. Okay, she's not showing up how I would expect right now, but I wonder what else happened today. And I feel like in so many times, people don't take that step. Oh, she seems angry. She seems rushed. She seems frustrated. She seems like she doesn't care. She seems aloof. She seems... Now, I would not say, especially in a hypothetical, that that's an incorrect observation. But until we start thinking, well, wait a minute, it's first thing in the morning. I know she's got a new family. I know, like, you know, whatever else is going on, to help us put those pieces together and understand. And I would assume you talked about transparency earlier to the degree that it's appropriate, even communicating some of these things. So, hey, I know I'm 15 minutes late today. The daycare people weren't there to open up in time. I had my little boy and girl in the car with me screaming and crying. Traffic was a mess. Let me get one cup of coffee and then I'll come see you. Like, so even just giving that message helps people go, well, okay, yeah, that's life. It's happened to all of us. And if it hasn't yet, it will. And so now they can be a little bit more understanding for the conversations to follow.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, that's it. People are more skeptical, Michael, than ever before, right? Sure. And they're critical. So when you show your real self, your authentic, sincere self, and your vulnerability, like who you really are, like the real deal, that builds trust. The more people understand and the more appreciation they have of who you are and what you've gone through, the more empathetic they'll be towards you. And that's a key driver to building trust, is really being able to show empathy and communicate empathy. That can really move the needle for people. And, you know, I know, as we said in the beginning, we could probably talk about all this this topic all day long, but that is another key driver to building trust, is really understanding how to show your empathy and be an empathetic person. And I don't mean like the soft and fuzzy. I mean really understanding someone else's perspective.
So let's talk about that for a second. Outside of just saying, I understand, which is a real double-edged sword and can backfire pretty quickly if we're not careful. And outside of, you know, facial expressions and body language and some of those things that we've all been taught, what are some of the real important tactical ways of showing empathy that go beyond just the fuzzy?
Well, instead of saying, I understand, say, you know, if I may, this is what you said. I understand you must be feeling like this. Is that true? Right? To really show you do understand. Or share, I understand. I actually went through something very similar. And then that shows the other person. But you don't want to put too much time on what your situation is, because the other person's sharing.
Yes.
So, you know, empathy is a skill. It can be learned, just like learning how to build trust is a skill. And empathy is part of that. And when you listen really carefully to others and really try to understand their perspective, you know, what it was like before they got to work, what's a typical day in life like for them, What are the priorities that they have? What are the issues? What are the things that they're dealing with? Really understanding them holistically, that's when you really can show your empathy. And one of the things, you know, as a tool I might suggest to your listeners is, you know, think about that iceberg. You know, we see the tip. What else is happening down here?
That's a great point.
What else is going on?
Because so much more is what's underneath, and that's what's driving what you talked about earlier, people's emotions and their evaluations and the decisions that they're making.
Yeah. I mean, here's another tip. So in my book, Trusted, there's a section at the end of each chapter that I call Making It Happen. And I use that section to share some tips to really operationalize it so that people know, okay, if here's some step-by-steps and here's some tools to actually become more trusted. And after the first principle, which is all about listening carefully with empathy and compassion, the first tip that I have is spend 5 times the amount of time thinking about the other person as you would think about what you're going to say to that person. So as an example, before we met on this podcast, I hope for you, many of your guests would do a little homework, right? And so I thought, okay, well, how can this be a successful show for Michael? Well, did a little research into what you ask other guests, what other kinds of guests you have. And then I think, okay, well, what's a typical day in the life like for you? And how do you want things to go on a podcast? Which is why I asked you those questions up front. When we take that time, then we understand what's important to the other person. And do you know what? It all sounds common sense to some people, what I'm saying. However, these soft skills that some people call them, they're not taught in school. And when you learn how to build relationships of trust, it can actually change the trajectory of your entire career like it did for Mark. It can change the trajectory of your company. Trust is a predictor of future success. So as you mentioned in the beginning of our show, the framework and the model that I built is all science-based. And it has been statistically proven that when you apply these 8 principles of trust and you apply the model to become more trustworthy, you will have more referrals, more profits, people will continue to buy, higher satisfaction, and greater success.
And having the principles to follow as a guide and having the reference to go back to and build in and reflect on, especially with the index and some of the other things you talked about, give people, you talked about collecting tools throughout the conversation. It gives people the opportunity to collect and to use those tools. So as we wrap it up, you've talked about your books, you've talked about your workshops, you've talked about your assessments. For people that are listening to this and saying, that sounds like what I want, where do I go learn more? How do people connect with you and access your work?
There's a few ways. You can connect with me on LinkedIn, Natalie Doyle Oldfield. You can send me a direct message, noldfield@successthroughtrust.com. You can find my book, Trusted, The Proven Path to Customer Loyalty and Business Growth on Amazon.com or Amazon.ca or .e. You know, wherever you are in the world, it's on Amazon. And you can go to my website too. And that's at successthroughtrust.com. When you do go to my website, you'll see there's a section you can sign up for my newsletter where I send trust tips out on a regular basis. And there's also an assessment there to do a short 2-minute assessment of your team. And you're welcome to download that as well.
Awesome. I will make sure all of those links are in the show notes so people don't have to go hunting for them. I have them right there at their fingertips. It was a pleasure meeting you, Natalie. Thank you so much for being here today. Thank you for sharing your work, your research, and your methods with us. I don't know why methods was so hard to say. Your methods with us. I really appreciate the conversation. I look forward to staying in touch.
Me too, Michael. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Take care. Natalie, thank you for joining us today. I appreciate the great conversation and everything that you taught us from your work, your research, and your experience today. Thank you so very much. You made so many great points. I love how you highlighted the opposite of trust is uncertainty. What a great way to illustrate and think about it. Also, your point about thinking 5 times more about your audience than what they're experiencing than our own words was another great point. And I think you hit the nail right on the head when you said trust is emblematic of leadership. I couldn't agree more. A great conversation. Thank you for sharing the time to share your work with us today. And thank you for everybody listening. Again, hopefully you were taking notes as I was, and you've got new ideas on how to apply her lessons in all of your high priority conversations. Please, before you go, take a couple seconds, like the show, subscribe to it, share it, leave us your feedback. We'd love to hear from you. And again, when you've got the time, please check out our sponsors. Head over to humantel.com. And when you decide which training module you want to take, enter the code INQUASIVE25 to get 25% off your program as you learn to develop the skill set necessary to identify when people's emotions are changing, what they're likely thinking and feeling through their facial expressions and their nonverbal communication. I've done all the training myself. I vouch for it completely. I highly recommend it. For the professional interviewers, please head over to certifiedinterviewer.com. That's where you can get all your questions answered for the International Association of Interviewers. What's in it for you? What will you get from joining the organization? And also, how can you contribute to the organization? That is also where you'll get all your questions answered about the Certified Forensic Interviewer designation. Who qualifies? How do you apply? How do you prepare for? What do you do when you pass the exam? What can it mean for your career? That's all over at certifiedinterviewer.com. And while you're online, please head over to inquasive.com. That's where you can learn more about the programs our clients ask us to customize for their senior leaders, business development teams, HR teams, and more to teach them how to encourage people to share sensitive information under vulnerable circumstances in the face of consequences. Thank you for being here week after week. We truly appreciate it. Please stay safe, take care of each other, and we'll see you next time. Thank you.